Well, welcome everybody to Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio. You are listening to my. I am your host, Daniel Kerbein, and we are also co-hosted usually by Evelina Molina. She has actually handled the Spanish language version of the program, and I am in the English language version. And I am talking to Doug Real, who is personally involved with Transition Albany and a number of transition efforts, and is involved with North Atlantic Books, which has just come out with their Evolver editions in collaboration with Reality Sandwich. So we are going to be talking about here what we're looking at with the realities of climate change and what those big indicators are around the world right now, what they're telling us, and what we need to be getting busy with. And we have somebody who's really looked at this very closely. Doug Real, thank you for joining us here on Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio.
Daniel, thanks. Good to be with you.
And one of the things that we, in fact, I met you at a Transition Albany event. And what were they calling that? What was the theme of it?
The event that was in May of this year was called The Great Unleashing.
The Great Unleashing.
Transition Albany in Albany, California, was founded in 2009 by Catherine Sutton, and it had been slowly percolating and more people were being involved. But The Great Unleashing in May was designed to really activate the movement more widely, locally, and pull in more people and really try to get more of the ideas out to more interested folks and really just get more people involved. And it certainly worked in my case because while I was aware of Transition Albany, it was The Great Unleashing that really connected me in with a lot of different folks. And I had some ideas, but the transition movement, The Great Unleashing, really gave me a good platform to be collaborative with others and to get some of these things going. So it's been pretty exciting how much has happened in a relatively short time.
And I regard that as a breakthrough transition event, particularly for me. I met Richard Heimberg, recorded a speech. He gave me the consent to have it uploaded on our podcast, which people can find. And I'll give the addresses and everything for that during this broadcast. And also Ashel Eldridge, who came, not only was a performer there doing hip hop, but he is a very involved activist in transition, very involved with different areas of bringing transition to minority communities and into Oakland and having diversity. And you know, like we're todos juntos, we're all together. In doing what we need to do. So Doug Real, we are looking at an era of ever increasing and rapidly moving on climate change. What else do you see affecting us, and where do you see us going? What do we need to get busy with?
Well, I saw a lot of things coming, things that were becoming present in my own life and my own experience. And from my work as associate publisher here at North Atlantic Books and Evolver Editions, our new imprint, we primarily publish what I'd call loosely as new consciousness, though we have a strong martial arts, somatics, bodywork, and alternative healing, health and healing titles. We have a lot of folks who are thinking out on the fringes and trying to look ahead from a futurist standpoint. And whether it's a 2012 perspective or a climate change perspective, there's some heightened awareness that was really coming around in a lot of what our authors were talking about. And couple that with some of the things that I just saw in my own life, for instance, going to the Sierras at a regular time year to year, I was starting to see changes in the amount of the snowpack and how early streams were drying up that I would cross each year hiking and backpacking in the mountains. And I just, being aware of the challenges of climate change, I started to see these things come home. And for folks in the Bay Area, these are really critical issues, especially an issue like the snowpack in the Sierra, because
right.
I mean, we're a very dry area, and we don't have water systems that are set up to deal with a change like the snowpack in the Sierra.
Right.
So when it comes to
the snowpack is like having a natural reservoir, right? It's like having the snowpack is like having a natural reservoir that it gradually
melts. Yeah, absolutely.
That's
our natural reservoir. And we've already seen in the world places like Bolivia and other parts of the world, but Bolivia and parts of the Himalaya, where those natural reservoirs are actually going away, and the people are already in a critical place. We should be creating awareness around these sorts of issues, because there is no real backup system until we, and if there is one, it's on a timeline that is quite long for us to implement.
Right.
So these are just some of the things that I saw in my own experience. So I just felt a greater and greater urgency to connect with other folks. And part of that manifested on the publishing side. The Evolver Editions imprint is a collaboration with Reality Sandwich and their RealitySandwich.com.
Right.
An online magazine publishing, if you will, for really a raised consciousness and a visionary look at some of these issues. And Evolver.net, which is their related site, which is their social network, really an alternative to places like Facebook and MySpace, where they encourage the sort of dialogue that really should be happening much more widely.
Wow, Evolver.net.
Where there's not a sort of left-right
right.
breakdown, I'm right, you're wrong, and it's one way or the other way, that really the solution is not black or white, it's shades of gray. But most important, there's certainly a sense that we need to get on these things and get on them right away.
Right, make sure that in the face of climate change that we have sources of water, that we're actually doing what needs to be done to make sure that that people are capturing their water, that there's awareness that, hey, look, you know, we're moving from predictability into unpredictability, and that includes everything. It includes everything from power, food, water, and when it's unpredictable like that, the more we have handled locally, the better off we'll be. Is that kind of...
Yeah, and that last point is a good one, because ultimately the solutions are local, and there's been a lot of complaining about the federal government, but ultimately I think folks should be looking closer to home for the solutions, and often right in their block or their apartment building or really close to home. And that's what Transition Town talks about, is local resilience, community, and really in the end what is a view of happiness that I think is actually more appropriate than I would say would be the U.S. consumer-based version of happiness, which is the next newest product and having a certain size house, those sorts of things.
Right.
It's really defining happiness as making sure there's an assurance of having everything that one needs, but also having a connection to the community that's actually very rewarding and fulfilling. I think going forward, as there are some tipping points coming, whether it's water in our neck of the woods as a tipping point, or further deterioration in the economy, which I think is also very likely, because the greater U.S. and world economies have been slowing and are likely going to stop because they depend on unending growth, which usually means monetizing goods and services in an unending way.
Right.
And that's been done in previous decades by opening up, quote-unquote, opening up new markets, which often means enlisting developing countries, quote-unquote, into our model of economy.
Right.
And for the most part, we're running out of things to monetize, and that's what's been fueling our growth. So ultimately, the growth is going to continue to slow as it's been slowing since the 1970s and is likely going to come to a stop. Now, for folks who understand the challenges in front of us, that's not necessarily an unwelcome thing, but only if we have a certain level of preparedness.
Right.
But for a lot of other people who are, waiting for the economy to come back and using that sort of rhetoric, this idea is one that they're not willing to tackle and take on as a viable possibility.
And I'm going to just stop for a minute so this can sink in for people. That first of all, who we're talking to is Doug Real. He's a publisher with North Atlantic Books. They're Evolver Editions, and they're in collaboration with Reality Sandwich. And this is an outfit that is really looking at what we need to be putting in place and thoughts about how to be prepared for things that are that are happening that are becoming very unpredictable with climate and economy. And one of the things that you just said, Doug, that I want to make sure sinks in is that this economy is really showing all the signs of coming to not only a slowdown but a halt. And it's not something, a message you're going to get from the mainstream media who want us to keep on buying, and as long as people are buying, things are good. And yet, well, lots of us have had some practice at doing without, whether it be from unemployment or some other cause, with this economy the way it is. So I wanted to stop there and then move forward. So I really like the train of thought that you're on, because we've explored this in a lot of ways, but it sounds like you've got some substance to bring to it, Doug.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's definitely the critical point, because everything that we've talked about up until now, all these things do come together. So there's the issue of how do we get what we need to survive. In other words, you know, how do we get the food that we need, the water, the level of energy use that we need to do the basic things. But it's very likely that we'll look back at this time, and our children and grandchildren will look back at this time, and they'll see that we were really binging and on cheap, well, at this point, inexpensive energy, but it's going to get more expensive. And it's fine to look for new sources of energy, but I would caution that those new sources of energy, I mean, they should be balanced, and we shouldn't go for these new energy sources at all costs,
mm-hmm.
because some of the environmental costs or health costs or other costs are just too high.
Mm-hmm.
But really, opening up those other energies are simply to get us over the hump here and through the tipping point and through a potentially difficult time, and hopefully give us the time that we need to really correct our systems. I didn't see this as the Great Recession. My hope is that it's more of a great correction, that we actually scale ourselves to a proper level of exchange that isn't necessarily all monetary based.
Mm-hmm. So that we have
there is that we have a certain amount of community exchange to help families and individuals get what they need through other forms of monetary exchange, because that, again,
perfect.
That as we've seen, the money and capitalism, ultimately money is siphoned from those through a usury economy, an interest-based economy, is siphoned from those who have more, from those who have less, to those who have more.
Mm-hmm.
And if that cycle continues, there's very little to stop that process from continuing. And I think that what we've seen in the events in Tunisia and Egypt and the London riots show that there's potentially explosive situations if that wealth exchange and disenfranchisement continues.
Right, right. That is one of the things that we're looking at, is the there's not only this incredible amount of climate-related events, but and there's precious little coverage of some of the implications of all these events. I mean, when you start taking them all in an aggregate, what happened this year, it's amazing. Like hundreds of thousands of acres being lost in wildfires. You got the rest of the Midwest underwater for most of the year around, you know, off the Missouri River. You got mile-wide tornadoes. I mean, you can just go on and on and on with this. And even up here in the North Coast, we think we're totally insulated from it. And yet the vineyard industry lost just this year because of long rains about 15% of its crop, and if it had been one more week, that would have gone to 30% of the crop. It's so delicate. We are so dependent on the environment. It's actually, when it starts happening like that, it's unbelievable. And so what you're talking about now,
it's already started in many ways, whether it's a hurricane or whether it's an earthquake in this country or in Japan. You know, our infrastructure is—it certainly could stand a reboot to move it away from such a car-based culture. And I think there
Very
is a movement back toward the cities in a way. I think the housing crisis has put a real spotlight on the problems that we had in building larger square-foot houses further away from urban centers.
Mm-hmm.
Urban centers are actually much greener in the long run than sprawl.
Yeah.
So there's certainly ways that we can create community and look at local food sheds and watersheds that can actually support the size urban centers that we have now, but not if it's based on the backbone of cheap energy and it ignores the impact of climate change that is likely going to continue in the short term and medium term, but in the long run, if we can actually curb certain behaviors, then we do have a chance of actually coming out of the worst of it with not too much problem. But that remains on how remains to be seen in how quickly we can make some of the shifts that we need to make.
Well, one of the shifts that you've mentioned already has to do with economic, and it has to do with going toward local trade exchanges, local. In fact, I just recently interviewed Howard Lenhart, who's involved with starting a California stock exchange and microlending at the regional level within the state of California.
Right.
So there's not only talk about it, but there are actually being measures put into place to make that succeed. What else do you see in a community when we look around and we see, okay, when things get unpredictable, what will become unpredictable, and what can we have in place to make sure that we're coping?
Well, some of Lenhart's things are really useful tools and actually help move us away from a dependence on central banks and larger corporations, because ultimately, keeping the economic exchange closer to home benefits everybody in the community.
Right.
But ultimately, we're going to have to move away from some of those monetary exchanges, because those do just replicate what exists now in the larger economy.
Very good point.
Some examples of what are the kind of things that we've been working on in our local transition towns. And one example is garden work parties that we have through neighborhood vegetables.
Yes,
so there is some material that homeowners would buy, but where the labor and the time is concerned, there's mailing lists that an email will go out to give people some lead time about a work party, and these work parties usually help clear space in people's yards, install raised beds for edibles, and install gray water, which is, for those who don't know, using gray water waste from the household to irrigate lawn or recycle back into appliances. So really to help people's houses and living spaces be more sustainable, be more resilient, and a lot of these things will also help save money in the short term, which helps people prepare for a time when money might be less available and also less important in some respects. So those work parties have been very interesting, because what they do is they create a circle and a chain, because people will get their yards worked on, and we've installed beds. Lawrence of Berkeley, who started Neighborhood Vegetables, has over 2,000 people on his mailing list, and we've had work parties in Oakland and Berkeley primarily, but we've had a number in Albany recently.
Yeah.
And what's nice is those people who have had work parties at their house, then they give back by attending other work parties and sharing that expertise. And so it doesn't have to be a monetary exchange to help people move toward a more sustainable way of living, of growing their own food, of using resources. It can be a community-based thing that helps grow, but there's still some monetary exchange, whether it's the lumber or the dirt for the beds or other tools. So there is a place for those businesses to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, especially the ones that have a sustainable bent to them,
right.
And those get to be pretty well known in this community. So the people who are involved in it know what businesses are friendly to our ideas.
And those are very busy and active work parties. And you know, it's one of the things that I look at is, you know, someone might say, well, you know, I just got a couple hundred feet here, or maybe I've got, you know, 50 feet by 20 feet, you know, and after a while, you know, 400 or 1,000 square foot yard, and you start having many of them, starts turning into acres in the aggregate, you know, of different people growing different things that are edible. And a lot of these plots, I understand from Lawrence saying, is that they have surplus.
Well, that's ideal. I mean, that's one of the big, I coordinate specifically the food and edible initiatives for Transition Albany, and that increasing yields is a big part of what we're pushing for, whether it be in people's yards or we're looking at use of other land in town and in the Bay Area, such as a farm lit on a community garden and meeting space on the Key Root Median, where we just had Alborito Streets last weekend, street festival, or looking at alternatives for the Gill Tract and the adjoining land. Currently, there are some development ideas there, but we are putting forth some different ideas as far as what that space could be used as. Because if we can increase yields, then that food can actually go and do some different things.
Right.
For instance, in the Albany schools, there's a very active garden program, and that produce, that organic, locally grown produce, is going into salad bars in the schools.
That's great.
And even into the elementary level schools. So kids, and also create an edible classroom, so kids are really seeing the full, where their food is coming from, and are being offered a chance to not only develop the food, but then have access to it, too.
Yes, you have stuff that's full of vitamins and fiber and all the things.
Exactly, and gets the kids outside, and it gets them excited about it, too, and really
right.
understanding where the food comes from. Just creates that awareness.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the reasons why, and for listeners, why this becomes so important when we're talking about transition and things becoming unpredictable is, you know, one example is that Sonoma County just ran a food inventory, a food for acreage that's available to actually grow food on. And if the Safeway truck stopped coming and Sonoma County had to provide its own food for the county, there's not enough acreage available. And that's where, as far as, you know, in the agricultural zones, the existing agricultural zones, but that gets totally supplemented by people's individual plots of land. You have like the Cuba situation where people can start growing food anywhere, and it doesn't
right.
have to be. And the vineyards, I think, are going to eventually start looking at diversity for the first time in years. Once they start losing their grape crop to climate change, they're going to start looking for more diversity.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. There's another interesting development in Northern California up in Willits. The somebody in the city government did some – they looked at how much money was going into the Safeway, which was the grocery store in town, and how much money was – you know, they were trucking in this produce, and how much dollars were coming out of the community into Safeway for all this produce. And they did – some work on it, and what they concluded was that, I mean, it was millions of dollars annually. So what they did was purchase land in Willits and convert it to pretty much a city farm.
Wow.
And it's I'm looking into doing more research on that, mm-hmm. but from what I understand, that they bought this land, the city bought it, and it's city-owned land that they farm on, and that produce goes right into the community. And that's an excellent model, I think, wherever possible, whether it's in the Bay Area or in the greater U.S., wherever possible, the communities can create and grow foodstuffs in and around, local seasonal foodstuffs, food that can be grown where people are. That's a great way to go, and it was great to hear that a city government had done that analysis and had taken some action.
And there are additional benefits that a city or a community gets. I mean, when I look at the model that Albany and Berkeley are representing with these busy work parties, people are getting to know each other. You know, you get, like, real community out of this.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that, for me, has been the most... Really, it's a little bit unexpected. I understood that it would happen, but it's been really fantastic to meet so many neighbors, both in Albany, in town where I live, but also in Berkeley, in Oakland, El Cerrito, just the surrounding towns. And it does create, once you break down those barriers a little bit, they pretty much evaporate. And that's what's so exciting. And there's so much connection with folks who want to share ideas, want to share information. Just through my Albany Edibles work, I've had people in consecutive days, one person asked me, do you know somebody who has a worm composter? And the next day somebody came to me and said, you know, I have a worm composter that I'm looking to, I just don't need it anymore. So connecting those types of people, that's what's been really exciting, is that
yes.
that this cycle just happens, that somebody's not having to just go out and buy something new, that we're really trying to share these things, that there's a lot of these goods and usable goods out there. Unfortunately, our economy sort of relies on all of us to go out and buy the new thing. But really, that sort of growth is just not sustainable, and we're not making use of the things out there that already exist.
And another piece of this, too, I was interviewing someone from Transition Sonoma Valley. And, in fact, I went to a meeting. It was kind of like an introductory early formation meeting for Transition Sonoma Valley. And one of the people there talking there said, you know, the first task that we have here to undertake is to get to know not just each other, but who's living on the other side of the tracks. You know, who? Let's go meet the people who are living in the areas where we don't want to be at night, because they live there. And you know what? When things start becoming unpredictable, we're all in this together. And the sooner we get together, the better.
Sure, and it's not just places that we don't necessarily want to be. It's I've been to people's yards and invited in to houses and streets that I've never had a reason to be on.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's great to have that sort of connection and into areas and see different communities, just the different flavors of different neighborhoods, what's going on in different blocks.
And that whole concept,
and neighborhood vegetables encourages people when they're having a work party to connect with their neighbors, to let them know what's going on and invite them if they'd like to participate, or ultimately if they'd like to have a similar party at their place.
And that idea, that whole notion of, you know, people on the other side of tracks, et cetera, it's a construct and a creation. It's often alive in our stratified society, but which the point she was making is it's a construct, it's a creation, we can break it down.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
yes, it's definitely a construct, and it's really required to continue the status quo.
Yes.
And unfortunately, the status quo is going to break down because it's really reliant on a consumer base that's under increasing pressure. And the longer that the adherence to the status quo continues, it's going to be tougher for us to shift to something else.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what I've seen is just that there's a lot of people doing little things in this vein, whether I'm talking to people at the various garden swaps, which is neighbors exchanging produce with each other, or the work parties, or the various meetings that I attend. There's a lot of people doing these things, and I think that it's nearing a good tipping point that all these active folks, if we can connect them in the right ways, and I think the Internet and some of the other ways to connect them, whether it's Evolver.net or the Transition Town Network, connecting these like-minded people together will really help us activate at the level we need to make substantial change.
That is really terrific. And I would say that is a great way to conclude this really quite – I mean, we've been talking for over 20 minutes, and I still consider this a very brief interview with you, and one in which we can continue and cover a few other things and get caught up later on, you know, as time starts to unfold. Because we have a couple few other – we didn't even touch upon the next year and a half as we start to approach the end of the year 2012, which there are a number of people with quite a bit of interest in that. I would love to go there with you and possibly some of the people that are in the Evolver Network. So this is Shift Shapers Pole Reversal Radio. I am your host, Daniel Kerbein, and I am talking to Doug Reel, a publisher with North Atlantic Books. Be sure and go to – well, I'm going to let Doug tell you where to find the information that he and his company and the people on his network have to offer. Go for it, okay, Doug?
Sure. Information on North Atlantic Books can be found on www.northatlanticbooks.com, specifically on Evolver Editions at that address – /Evolver-editions. Another great place to learn about what we do is we've launched earlier this year our own social network related to our primary niches of publishing, and that is NAB, N-A-B, North Atlantic mm-hmm. Books, nabcommunities.com, N-A-B communities, one word, .com. And that's a place where folks can set up, it's a great way to connect with our authors, to get more information about the topics that we're publishing in and a bigger connection with Evolver Editions and our other publishing activities. On the transition side, I have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/albany.edibles, where I report on what's been going on the food and edibles initiatives in Albany and some of the activities that we have more widely in the region.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic. And I definitely am recommending that to anybody. It's got a great model there. People can just take a look at that and start doing things that are being successful in places like Albany. So it's a great way to go. And again, Doug Reel, thank you very much for joining us on Shift Shapers.
No problem, Dan. Thanks a lot. I enjoyed it.